Catholic Answers Live. Edgar Lujano once again filling in for Cy Kellett. And Cy should be back on Monday. And actually, that's basically a guarantee because it's a pre-record. So he will be back here on Monday. So if you're missing his voice, missing his face, if you're watching on YouTube, then you'll be able to see him once again on Monday. All right. And today's hour, we have Father Tad Poholcek. He is the Director of Education at the National Catholic Bioethics Center. And you can find that at ncbcenter.org, or you can visit his personal website at fathertad.com. Father, how are you?
I'm doing great, Edgar. Great to be able to join you.
Yeah, thank you. It's definitely good to have you here. I've actually been in the background when you've been on the show before, so listening to some of the conversations have been quite fascinating in this new and developing world of bioethics.
Well, I'm glad that you've been in the background. That's why the show's probably went so smoothly in the past.
Well, myself and a good team that we have here, so that's for sure.
Yes. That's awesome.
So one thing that's fun about being able to call screen is I get to hear that we get a lot of new callers, a lot of new Catholics, a lot of people who are, I guess, baby Catholics, right, who are still coming to understand a lot of the parts of Catholicism, including bioethics. So I kind of just wanted to ask you if you can just kind of give me a summary of what bioethics actually is.
Yeah, so bioethics refers to the dilemmas that sometimes arise in the biological and the medical fields. So these are areas that would include like making decisions at the end of life. Do I need to use a ventilator for somebody who, you know, has had a serious accident? How do I decide whether or not to do a surgery? Beginning of life issues from abortion, contraception, in vitro fertilization, a whole range of those types of issues. And, you know, issues in the middle as well, which would include like organ transplants, the question of, you know, the ethical propriety of that. What about issues in determining death prior to donating? What about donating my body to science? You know, those kinds of questions, those would all fit under the heading of what we mean by bioethics.
Okay, great. Well, if you have a question for Father Tad about anything regarding bioethics, any of those things that you saw, you heard him kind of spell out there, you can give us a call at 888-318-7884. That's 888-318-7884. So along those lines, if you look at the technology and how it's developing so quickly in today's world, it's quite fascinating. I was reading an article that I think you and I both read about a new baby or procedures that they've created where they've actually been able to create babies with the DNA of three people. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. So this is something that they're doing because some babies are born with very serious diseases that are caused by something called the mitochondria. And so when your mitochondria are bad, it causes these issues. And so what they've been doing is kind of tinkering with embryos that have bad mitochondria and trying to find some kind of a workaround in order to have children that will have a lower chance of being born with these bad diseases. And these diseases affect, you know, a lot of different things. They affect the muscles in the body, the brain. Some of the kids have problems with eyesight and hearing. So it's certainly a very serious constellation of symptoms. But the problem is that they're going about it in a way that actually is not a real therapy. You know, whenever you propose to do a therapy, the church is likely going to jump right on board and say, well, if it's a genuine therapy and there's some sickness or some disease that you're going to be curing, well, then we should proceed, and that's likely to be morally allowable. But in this case, what we're actually doing is taking embryos that have these defects and basically destroying the embryos and mixing them with parts of other embryos in order to reconstitute a new third embryo that does not have the mitochondria that are bad. So you're basically creating a new person out of the parts of, you know, prior ones. So that's the concern here. It's not a therapy, but it's a different kind of cobbling together of a human being out of other human parts.
This isn't completely new, right? It's been going on for a while. The technology has been developing over the last few years. I mean, obviously, it stemmed from wanting to help people with these mitochondrial, you know, disorders, I guess you would call it.
Yes.
So what was that development like? Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, I mean, the first case of this happened, I believe, in Jordan in 2017. That was the first case. And then the recent news reports that have been, you know, kind of gotten a lot of publicity in the past few days have been out of England. That England, there apparently are 4 or 5 babies that have been produced this way. And so that was considered, you know, to be the news story. So, yeah, this has some history that goes back a ways. Scientists have been working on it for some time. But now it's the kind of thing that they're starting to look at and starting to do a little bit more frequently.
Wow. Okay. Well, if you have any question for Father Tad regarding bioethics, you're more than welcome to give us a call. You can call us at 888-318-7884. That's 888-31-TRUTH. Now, looking at this, obviously, from the Catholic perspective, it destroys the human person that was already created, and it creates a new human being with just like these parts that are being put together?
That's correct. So, I mean, this is in some ways similar to cloning technology. So if you remember how Dolly the sheep was made, there was a nucleus that was taken. The nucleus has your chromosomes, your DNA, and it was dropped into a female egg. And this created a new sheep that had a predetermined kind of constitution genetically. So you're doing something similar here. You're moving a nucleus into another embryo that doesn't have the bad mitochondria. And as you do that, you basically create a new being with a different genetic patrimony. And, you know, this it's remarkable how we are able to manhandle and manipulate early human life in this way, and it still survives all of that, and in a few cases can go on and be implanted and be born as a baby. So it shows you a little bit of the resiliency of human life despite our tinkering. You know, at the very earliest stages, it is capable of navigating through this kind of area of this minefield, really, ethically speaking, as well as, you know, scientifically. I think it's a technology that involves a lot of potential damage along the way, because as you can imagine, to be doing this using human embryos, you're going to be doing a lot of experiments where many embryos are not going to survive. You're going to be, you know, pulling them apart, getting desired parts, and many of them simply won't make it through the won't run the gauntlet successfully. So this is something very similar to original efforts at in vitro fertilization, that, you know, many attempts were made, and the people who originally came up with the technology said, well, yeah, we lost hundreds of embryos before we could get one that would work. Wow. So, you know, it's definitely not something that's clean and neat, as it sometimes seems when you read a news story about the success. It usually has a backdrop and a background that is, you know, very problematic on its own terms.
Yeah, that's one thing I guess you don't really think about when you first hear of, well, there's a new child with a DNA of three people, that how many lives were actually destroyed just to get to this specific point of having 1 or 5 new embryos created. So that's definitely something to think about. So if you have, like I said, if you have a question for Father Tad, anything regarding bioethics, you can give us a call at 888-318-7884. That's 888-31-TRUTH. There are a few lines open if you want to give us a call. All right, we're going to go to our first break, and when we come back, we'll start hitting up the phones. What do you think, Father?
That sounds great.
All right, great. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Miss a show? Make sure to catch up by downloading the podcast, available online at catholic.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
We should pray because prayer is conversation with God, and conversation is the only way to build a relationship. We need that relationship with God. We should pray and talk with God about what's on our hearts, what's on our minds, what's active in our lives, the joys we have. We should share all of these with God. Prayer is conversation, and conversation is the only way to build a relationship with God. It's the most important relationship. All of our other relationships depend on this one.
Catholic Answers Live, Father Tad Pohlcheck discussing bioethics. As I was mentioning, Father Tad, just over the break, you know, there's a part of us humans who want to see the development of science the way we're seeing it now, but we also, we have to stop and actually think about what are the repercussions of that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, science is such an amazing force for good, potentially. But at the same time, if it goes off the rails, if it's not something that's done with ethics clearly in mind and as part of the scope of what you're doing, you realize how much power it wields, and it can become a force that, you know, is damaging to so many of us. And so I think it's essential here. Bioethics is such an important discipline, really, for today, for the modern man. We want to see science go forward, but especially when we're touching on these issues of life itself, you realize, you know, this is a sacred domain, and we need to proceed with great care and great attention, really, to the wisdom of Christ and His Church, you know, which sheds an incredible illuminating light over all of these kinds of questions.
Yeah. Excellent. Yeah. All right. If you want to ask Father Tad a question, like I said, you can give us a call at 888-318-7884. There are a couple of lines open for you to ask your question. Shall we go to the phones, Father? I think we lost them. It's okay. We'll once we get Father back on the line, we'll continue to the phones here. Before I do, I want to go ahead and go to this pitch that Carrie gave me. Be sure to visit shop.catholic.com this weekend to take advantage of our digital mega sale. We're offering unbeatable deals on hundreds of ebooks, e-magazines, MP3s, and digital videos, many priced at more than 50% off the normal price. But that's not all. We've also got great deals on the all weekend on our School of Apologetics courses. That's right. We're offering an additional 5 to 30% off the already discounted prices of all of our courses. We're actually up to 17 total courses, so, and many more to come in the future. So we've already been discussing those apologetics courses if you're interested in checking those out. So check those out. If you want to go over to shop.catholic.com, you can take advantage of the lowest prices we've had all year at our digital mega sale. So make sure to check that out. Father Tad, I think we have you back.
Yes, thankfully. A little glitch there for a moment.
All right. Well, let's go straight to the phones then. We have Philip calling from Phoenix, Arizona. Philip, go right ahead with your question for Father Tad.
Yes, hi. I guess I was just kind of wondering that we have robotic limbs as replacements right now for people who lost limbs in battle or however. And eventually, sci-fi has already foreseen this, but we're going to replace more and more pieces of our bodies with robotic pieces. And at some point, people are going to start trying to pay to have their whole body replaced so they don't die. And I was just wondering if there's any type of limit to how far we can go and basically still be human, still be not sinning by you know, destroying ourselves.
Yeah, I think, Philip, that's kind of a hard question. It's a broad conceptual question. I think that to the extent that one is using an approach that relies on artificial limbs, artificial parts, you know, an artificial heart, for example, you know, they're working on a pancreas that will help diabetics, that kind of thing. I mean, I think that all fits under the heading of a therapy. And it doesn't raise a problem per se, but I think you're sort of asking, well, what if, you know, one sort of took a head of a person and attached it to, you know, something that resembled a body, more like a cyborg. And, you know, I think that would raise a number of issues. It would first, technically, we're nowhere near being able to do anything like that, partly because connecting things to our nervous system is very tough. And of course, you know, we're all familiar with some of the work that's being done. Elon Musk is trying to get some implants that would go into the brain, and others as well. But it's a tough nut to crack. And I think that might represent a kind of point of limit in the effort to replace a lot of different parts. I think when you get close to the brain, you run into these kinds of limit cases potentially. So, you know, your question is slightly speculative. My answer is necessarily so as well. But I hope that that's, you know, somewhat helpful in the direction of what you're asking.
Any follow-up, Philip?
Yeah. No. I that's kind of what I was thinking. I was just wondering if anybody had, like, already, like, set in stone, like, guidelines foreseeing that technology in the future, or if that's still, we're just going to wait and see at this point type of thing.
Yeah, I mean, the kinds of guidelines that exist would pertain to making decisions about whether an intervention is reasonable. So, you know, the kinds of cases you're describing might follow, let's say somebody has a catastrophic accident, and in that accident, you know, they've lost a number of limbs maybe, and, you know, some other vital organs, and you're making this decision in the moment about, should we proceed with replacing a lot of different parts simultaneously? And the church does provide very, very helpful direction in addressing a question like that, because you have to ask, is the benefit going to outweigh the burden? And if you're changing, you know, a lot of different body parts and subjecting someone to extremely long and complex surgeries and recoveries after such surgeries, it may be the case that the burdens are way beyond the potential benefits, and especially if there are even questions about surviving such interventions and treatments. You know, we kind of sometimes talk about these things as if swapping out parts is just, you know, like swapping out a battery in your laptop, when of course it's not. It's a much more delicate and careful kind of a procedure to go in and surgically change the human body, and especially to align it with, you know, mechanical parts that are not native to that body. So the church does already have guidelines that can assist us in, you know, discerning some of those types of questions of proportionate interventions versus disproportionate, or as we sometimes say, you know, is this heroic, what we're proposing, and beyond the pale, and therefore not morally required? Or is this something that is reasonable to do, and therefore we'd call it an ordinary treatment? So those kinds of, you know, criteria are very, very well elucidated, and I think they will apply as more and more technical interventions of the type you're describing come to the fore.
Philip, thank you so much for your call. That was a great question. We'll go ahead and move on to our next caller, Carl from Ohio, listening on Annunciation Radio. Carl, go right ahead with your question.
Hello, Father. It seems to me about 15, 20 years ago, you did a video about stem cell research, and in it you mentioned that those adult stem cells showed promise in about 72 diseases. And I was wondering if you could update on that. And also, I really haven't heard anything about embryonic stem cells in the past few years. Are they still doing research on that? Could you update on that?
Yes, definitely. That's an important question. First of all, you ask about the adult stem cells. Those are the stem cells that come, for example, from your own bone marrow. And you take those cells and you may be able to put them into particular parts of the body and have healing and benefits follow from that. That kind of research is continuing to expand. So adult stem cells are finding more and more widespread applications and uses. When you ask about the embryonic stem cells, yes, the research is continuing. But part of the reason, interestingly, that you may not be hearing a lot about it in the news anymore is because if you think back, you know, to those 10, 15 years ago when it was in the news all the time, what was it that everybody wanted? They wanted federal funding. They wanted money. So it was all about money. And when the Obama administration came in, they basically said, oh, we'll pay for, you know, the embryonic stem cell research. They did away with the restrictions that had existed in the Bush administration, the limitations on funding. So because of that, it hasn't really been much in the news. It hasn't been high profile. But you may be wondering, have there been any treatments that have arisen? There was a report, might have been a year and a half, 2 years ago, in the New York Times about an individual who received a stem cell, human embryonic stem cell derivative that looked like it was helping to reverse his diabetes. And so that was one of the first clinical tests that indicated that there is some potential for the use of those cells clinically. Now, you know, you may be saying, oh, that's interesting. Now, what if, you know, somebody wants to find out more, or is there a way to do this ethically? Because obviously, if we have to destroy human embryos here, that's not going to be morally allowable or reasonable in any fashion, because human embryos are just younger versions of ourselves, and we shouldn't be exploiting them in that way. But there is another source of cells that are extremely flexible, like the ones that you get from embryos, and those ones come from your own skin cells that have been reprogrammed. They have a special technique that they can reprogram your own cells, kind of make them go back in time and become more primitive, more powerful. They become what are called induced pluripotent stem cells. So that kind of an approach, you know, if these embryonic stem cells do pan out eventually to more than just this one report, then induced pluripotent stem cells would offer a way to do the experiments that would be ethical, because you don't have to use any embryos. You use your own skin cells as the starting point for that. So that's kind of a quick update. I hope that's, you know, helpful and kind of what you were curious about, Carl.
Yes, yeah, that helped. Yes, thank you.
Great. Thank you for your call, Carl. You know, Father, I'm involved a little bit here and there in the mixed martial arts community. And one thing that there's lots of conversations about is using stem cell therapy for kind of helping out with knee injuries and arm shoulder injuries. Is that something that's I'm starting to see that becoming more and more common? Is that something that would be considered ethical?
Yes, that typically uses adult type stem cells. And so it would involve, for example, taking some of these stem cells either from the blood or from the bone marrow, putting them into the knee and allowing those cells to help, for example, with recoating cartilage onto bone, that kind of thing. So, yes, you know, sports medicine today is very much looking into the world of stem cell research and therapy. And I think there's a lot of hopeful directions that this may end up going in the future. You have to be careful. I'll just put a quick word of caution. Sometimes people hear stories like this and then they'll say, well, I want to quickly get something. Oh, well, it doesn't seem like there's anybody local. I'm going to go off to Mexico. Somebody in Mexico, you know, is offering to do this kind of on the side. We have to be very, very careful. If things have not been properly tested, they can actually be very, very dangerous as, you know, approaches or therapies that people may be experimenting with. So just that word of caution.
Yeah. Is there a possibility for cancer to develop because of that? Because you're introducing new cells into that.
If you're using the adult type stem cells, it doesn't appear that the cancer danger is very high, because you already have adult stem cells in your body. Your bone marrow is full of them. you have them floating around in your blood, and you have them in various pools and pockets in different organs in your body. So they're a stable cell type, but if you start working with embryonic stem cells, these are much more primitive.
All right, well, we're working on reconnecting with Father in 1 second. So you're listening to Catholic Answers Live. That was Father Tad. If you have any question about bioethics, you can reach him at National Catholic Bioethics Center at ncbcenter.org. There's actually a tab there where you can ask an ethicist. So if there's any question that you have, even if you don't call today, you can go to the website, check it out, ask a question there. Or if you want to see a little more of what Father Tad has going on in his world, you can visit fathertad.com. We'll be right back on Catholic Answers Live.
Are you ready to defend your faith in a world of unbelief? Join us at the 9th Annual Catholic Answers Apologetics Conference. This year's theme, I Believe in God, and it'll help you provide clear and charitable answers to atheism, agnosticism, and plain old indifference. Don't miss what promises to be the event of the season. Join us in San Diego from September 21st through 24th as we welcome our special guest, Dr. Scott Hahn, and an all-star lineup of great Catholic speakers. Spend quality time with your favorite Catholic Answers apologists and enjoy 4 days of fun, fellowship, and adoration of the Almighty. Seats are still available, but they're going fast. Visit CatholicAnswersConference.com or call 888-291-8000 to register. Enter promo code EARLY and save $50. That's CatholicAnswersConference.com.
Want to know more about the origins of the Catholic Church? Joe Heschmeyer explores the beginnings of Christianity. In the early church was the Catholic Church. Joe digs deep into the words and actions of those who lived right after the apostles to refute anti-Catholic claims of how the faith was lived back then. Order your copy of The Early Church Was the Catholic Church today at shop.catholic.com or get it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
If you're not a Bible scholar, the full message of how the Sunday Mass readings fit together can be tough to comprehend. Apologist Carlo Broussard is here to help. Join Carlo every Friday for the Sunday Catholic Word Podcast. In each episode, he unpacks the scripture readings for that Sunday and brings them all together so you can better understand and defend the faith. Visit SundayCatholicWord.com to subscribe. That's SundayCatholicWord.com.
Tomorrow on Mortal Life, the life you were meant to live.
We'll look at how the theology of the body can help you live a more abundant life.
That's tomorrow on Mortal Life, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 Central on EWTN Radio.
Now back to Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live. Edgar Lujano, podcast producer and normally call screener here, filling in for Cy Kellett. Cy will be back here next week with you guys with ordinary programming. But today, you're stuck with me for another half hour, which is kind of fun as I get to fill in for Cy. So today, this second hour, we're talking to Father Tad Poholcek from the National Catholics Bioethics Center. Talking about just bioethics and, you know, a lot of questions regarding new technologies and kind of how that affects the ethical world, especially coming from the Catholic perspective. So, Father, I was another article that you sent over that I found really fascinating as well is this the Japanese researchers saying that they're on the cusp of creating 100% lab-grown babies. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. So this is a very new technology that it's still not clear whether it has any application in humans. They've certainly done it in mice, but mice are quite different than humans on a lot of different levels. So they're kind of being a little bit speculative in that article. But basically what they did was they were able to take some cells from a male mouse and turn those cells into egg cells, believe it or not. And that was something that for a long time not been possible. And then they were able to use sperm from another mouse to fertilize. So in a sense, you were making then a baby mouse from two male contributors. And then now the question is, you know, will this be possible in humans? And they're speculating that they think it will be maybe 5, 10, 15 years down the road. There's also another side of that article that you mentioned that they don't really develop very much, but the work is happening in Japan. And this is work to grow embryos completely outside of a woman's body. In other words, in a machine, you know, baby in a bottle kind of thing. And with mice, again, they're making a lot of progress to be able to do this and, you know, have the embryos grow longer and longer. So the question is, will this be possible someday for humans to have, you know, completely machine-grown human beings? I think that's going to be, you know, a significant technical hurdle because the placenta, which connects the baby to mom, is a really complicated organ, and there's a lot about it that we still don't understand. But, you know, as time marches on, they will continue to make progress on that field.
Wow. The visual imagery that I get is from a scene from the movie The Matrix, where you have all these people plugged in. It looks like they're on in placentas and being used as batteries. It's kind of a not a good look of the future, as far as
that's
I'm concerned.
True. It's a little bit eerie, isn't it?
It very much is. Very much is. All right. Yeah. If you have any questions for Father Tad, you can give us a call at 888-318-7884. We'll go to Daniel listening in Indiana on his Alexa. Daniel, go right ahead with your question.
Hello. Thank you for answering my call. I am, first of all, I'm asking about whether giving your body to medical science is acceptable. I assume that's a yes. And the second question I have has to do with cremation. I have relatives that want a part of the ashes of my father. Others want to bury in different places, etc. So what is the actual Catholic teaching on what to do with cremains?
Okay, so yeah, very good questions. First, is it allowable to donate your body to science? The short answer would be yes, but there's a need to do some, as they say, due diligence here. So, for example, there might be a university that you're thinking of donating your body to, and that would be fine. But a lot of times there'll be paperwork that needs to be done ahead of time. And it is important that after the university has finished using your body, for whether they're doing it for research or teaching medical students or whatever it is, that the body should be returned to you. And usually the way this will be, they'll say, well, we will return cremains to you, and then you can, you know, take over. But you need to be sure that that's the case, that the body is not, you know, just sort of left in limbo or not dealt with in some fashion. So that, you know, that's one key thing. And I think the other important thing to remember about donating your body to science, a lot of people think, well, you know, this is my body. You know, we sort of hear that language with the abortion debate. I'm going to do whatever I want. But we're all connected to each other. So I do think it's important for people who are thinking about doing this to get the approval of their spouse, maybe their children, talk it through with other family members so that, you know, nobody is sort of shocked or scandalized in some fashion. I think just, you know, to do some due diligence there is important as well. So that's kind of in a nutshell the issue with donating your body. In terms of cremains and cremation, the church does allow for this, but I think it's important to emphasize that the church has a clear preference for whole body burial and funerals and so on, because this much more directly reminds us of our embodiedness. It reminds us of the fact that these bodies are destined for resurrection. And there's a sense in which when we cremate somebody, we may sort of put that all to the side and sort of diminish the person after death. And you discussed a couple of problematic areas that happen all the time and really are a significant pastoral problem for many of us in the church, where families will say, well, you know, I want to get dad's ashes, and we're going to put half of them here, and we'll put half of them there, and we're going to scatter some of them here and scatter. And the church is very clear that there should not be any dividing of the ashes, and any ashes that are obtained back from the funeral home need to be interred in the family plot. You know, the mausoleum, the plot, whatever the family has, all together and not distributed, not turned into jewelry, and not scattered anywhere, because we have a duty, an obligation to show respect for the remains of the dead. And I think we have also a Christian duty to pray for our loved ones who are deceased. And the church, in her wisdom, really stresses the value of having a geographical location where we can go. You know, you go and there's a tombstone, and you're there, you remember the person, you're praying for their soul, you're asking them to pray for you. This is, you know, a very kind of concrete reality that the church has emphasized over and over is very valuable for us to safeguard. Otherwise, we hear about these horror stories where, you know, people have grandma on the ledge above the fireplace, and then she ends up in the attic, and then her ashes are lost, and nobody even knows where they are. And so, you know, that kind of situation does raise legitimate concerns about not respecting the remains and not respecting really the memory of our loved ones who have passed on. So I hope that helps clarify a little bit on that issue.
How's that, Daniel?
That's a great answer. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for your call, Daniel. Really appreciate it. Moving on, let's go to one more call before we go to the break. Let's go with Michael in Oregon, listening on Modern Day Radio. Michael, go right ahead with your question.
Yeah, hello. I wanted to ask one thing, but then based on that last call, I want to ask something different. Which is more important? Can I ask both, or should I just do the more important one, or the one I called about?
Let's do your briefest question. That way we can go to the break, and then maybe after the break we'll continue for the second one.
Got it. Okay, brief question about the issue with experimentation and these procedures on human embryos. What I'm wondering is it still a legal requirement to do these kinds of procedures on animal embryos first? I mean, I know that doesn't make experimenting on human embryos okay, but I'm just asking about the current legal situation. Or is it because they're not really considered human beings by many scientists, or are they just skipping that step and going to experiment on human embryos?
Well, I would say that, I mean, you're asking a legal question, and as far as I'm aware, I'm not a legal scholar.
All right. Sorry about that, Michael. Give us one second. Let's go on a break right now. Michael, we'll get back to you in one second once we reconnect with Father Tad. All right. You're listening to Catholic Answers Live. If you do have a question for Father Tad, you can give us a call at 888-318-7884. That's 888-31-TRUTH.
There's only one. Catholic Answers Live.
We have a big problem. Our culture is dying, and souls are in danger of being lost. The answer is conversion to Jesus Christ in His church. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a Catholic organization, and we have hundreds of teams spreading the good news throughout the country. But we need your help. The harvest is great, but the laborers are few. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
EWTN uses the power of radio to reach people whenever and wherever they're searching for answers to questions about their Catholic faith. EWTN Radio is heard on over 500 domestic and international AM and FM radio affiliates. For a complete list of programs and how to hear EWTN Radio, visit EWTN.com and click radio. EWTN, the global Catholic network.
Catholic Answers Live on the on, it's no longer on the phone. It's actually on video and the phone. Well, not on the phone, but on the on video with Father Tad Poholchek. We got cut off there for a second, but we'll jump right back into Michael's question, asking about the tests on animal embryos and if that's ethical, and do they skip that step or and go straight to human embryos, or what does that look like?
Yeah, so I mean, Michael was asking about whether it's a legal requirement, and it doesn't seem that there is any legal limitations here. So the issue is more, you know, what is the typical ethical approach that scientists feel they need to do? And always, when you're developing something new, you do all your tests in animals first. So that has always been a kind of canon of basic experimentation and basic research. But I would say, you know, as we move further down the path of, to use the fancy word, instrumentalizing humans, in other words, you know, depersonalizing them, treating them as objects, and especially with little embryos, the temptation becomes stronger to basically skip some of those preliminary steps, go straight for the gold, as it were, and, you know, do experiments on very young humans who are extremely vulnerable, who have been part of the in vitro fertilization process of, you know, treatments that are made available through infertility clinics. So sadly, I think there's a move away from the old paradigm where it was very, very clear you always had to do everything in animals first before ever, you know, touching any human being.
Michael?
Thank you. That's helpful thought. I was hoping if there's still time, I might ask the second one, which is now much more important to me.
Yeah.
And that is, so I'm a fifth grade teacher at a Catholic school, and we went on a field trip, and there was what was called a prenatal exhibit, which showed different stages of developmental process of the embryo, which at first I'm thinking, this is great because it's showing the kids how they're real people. But then it became clear that they actually were real people, that the embryos used had died of natural causes and were preserved on display to demonstrate this. And so I was really torn, and some of the kids were kind of scandalized by it. Now I need to know how to try to explain the ethical perspective on that kind of situation. Like, because it seemed like the ends were good. We're showing people the truth of how the human being develops. But then I'm asking myself, but is this a proper, you know, treatment of these human bodies that are now, you know, were people, however young, and now are being used as part of this demonstration? Like, I didn't really know what to think of that.
Yeah, great question. I think one of the key areas of ethical concern there would be, was informed consent obtained? You know, because sometimes, again, when it's early human life, there may not have been all the steps taken to ask mom and dad, do they grant permission that the child be used in this way? You know, there's a similar type of question that comes up with the Body Worlds exhibit. You may have heard of this, where they plastinate human bodies that died in various disasters. And they're on display in museums, and it's been in Boston and New York and, you know, around the world. And to the extent that there was not proper consent obtained, there would be a problem. I think, you know, there is also a question sort of the wisdom of doing this in a very public way, precisely because of what you're describing, that sometimes young people won't know how to process this. And it may require some extra effort on our part. I remember when I was a graduate student at Yale University, they had a room there at the medical school where they had a number of miscarried babies that were kept in formaldehyde. And, you know, it was very interesting for me as a scientist to see what some of the genetic defects look like in these babies. But, you know, I was a scientist sort of prepared, ready to look at that sort of thing, versus bringing kids from the fifth grade, you know, who may not be quite at that point. So I do think, you know, we have to kind of do things slowly, intentionally, carefully, and not sort of overwhelm people, despite I understand the good intention here of making it clear that these are these are just the stages of human life, but there may be other ways that the same good end could be achieved without, you know, being quite as disruptive.
Michael, thank you so much for your call. We're gonna move on to the rest of the callers. We want to make sure we get as many people on as possible. We're gonna move on to Eric, listening in Oregon, also, and listening on Modern Day Radio. Erica, go ahead with your question.
Hello, I am part of several Facebook groups related to NFP and the church's teaching on marital relations. But a question that has come up from time to time is, if there is a woman who is currently pregnant and suffers from recurrent infections due to those exposure to semen, if it is licit or illicit still for her to use prophylactic barriers to prevent that exposure to semen. In this case, the woman was very concerned about bacterial vaginosis because the methods of treatment available to her could potentially harm the fetus if she were to contract that.
I think to the extent that you are proposing the use of a complete barrier method, the short answer would be no, this would not be morally permissible. But there may be a way here if somebody has, as you're suggesting, maybe an allergy to semen or to some other component of the ejaculate, including, you know, maybe something medicinal that the man may be taking, it may be possible to use what's called a perforated condom, especially in the case like you're describing where the woman is already pregnant and, you know, can't get pregnant from marital intercourse. And if she uses a perforated condom where some of the sample passes through, but some is retained and lowers her exposure to these agents, that could be allowable if there is a sufficiently serious reason for doing so. But to use complete barrier method would not, because then you are not even engaging in a marital act. Deposition of semen into the vagina is part of what a true marital act is always constituted as. And so using complete barrier methods is to engage in something that is non-marital at its core and always not acceptable. So I hope that that's helpful.
How's that?
Yeah, Erica? No, I really appreciate that answer. Is it possible to have a follow-up question or maybe in the next hour? I don't know if you'd still be on bioethics at that point.
You can go ahead with the follow-up.
Oh, sorry. Did you say right now?
Yeah, go right ahead.
Okay. The follow-up would be, in general, what are the guidelines on prophylactics? Because you're not treating something that's gone wrong. Even leaving the whole sexual scene aside, if you were to preventively take antibiotics or something like that, if the doctor thought that that was appropriate, is there any moral contingencies?
Well, it's going to depend on the particulars. So, if you were, let's say, in a work environment where there was some high risk of you contracting a particular respiratory ailment, you know, through the air, and you could take something prophylactically that would protect you, let's say you're a nurse, then of course that may be very reasonable to do. So those types of cases may be fairly straightforward, but there will be others where, for example, you may have an individual who has same-sex attraction, and he goes to his physician and asks for a prophylactic dose of a retroviral substance so that he has a lower chance of contracting the virus that causes AIDS because he's planning to go out and have, you know, a party kind of party night type thing. That would raise problems. There's a context issue here that if the physician were to prescribe in a way where he knew that this was the very reason, because this individual is going to engage in reckless behavior, sexual behavior, the physician really should not be prescribing in that specific set of circumstances that kind of prophylactic thing, because that's going to, in fact, encourage further recklessness when what an individual needs in that case is to, you know, be drawn in a different direction, in the direction of chaste sexual behavior. So, the details, I can't answer your question completely in the general, even though you've asked it in the general. It's going to depend very much on the specifics of each case and analyzing that correctly.
Erica, thank you so much for your call. I want to try to get one more person on the air. Archie in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, listening on Sirius XM 130. Archie, go ahead with your question.
Yeah, I have a question / comment. I'm an anesthesiologist, and often a woman will present to the emergency room with an ectopic pregnancy. And for listeners that may not understand, that means there's a fertilized egg or embryo, but not in the uterus. It can be in the fallopian tubes or even sometimes outside the fallopian tubes. And it can be associated with bleeding that jeopardizes the mother's life. And we provide anesthesia, and the surgeons do their part to help the mom. But sometimes they've opened up, and you can see an intact sac and embryo. And I just never have felt good about that. I'm looking for words of reassurance.
So, Father, what are your...
Never participated in abortion ever, but this is, we're saving the mom's life. It just never has felt good.
Yeah, so I missed just part of the central part. What is the actual procedure that is being utilized?
It's an ectopic pregnancy, which means they go into the abdomen because
Yes, but what is the procedure? Is the procedure a salpingectomy? Is it a salpingostomy? Or is it the use of methotrexate?
This would be a surgery like the mother's hemorrhaging. They have low blood pressure. And they'll do a salpingotomy, but they'll just take what's inside the fallopian tube out.
Okay. Yeah, that raises some concerns, because what you are doing is directly acting on the body person of the child. Even though the child is ectopically located, you are doing an action that often is an action that actually pulls the child out even in parts or pieces. And rather than a salpingectomy, which would involve removing the tube that the baby is inside, which is actually the mother's body. You're doing an operation on the mother's body to safeguard the mother's health and tolerating the second unintended effect, which will be the secondary demise of that child. That approach would be allowable in treating an ectopic pregnancy. But the salpingostomy appears to involve, you know, a direct attack on the life of that child, and raises moral concerns on that fundamental level.
Yeah, it's like almost splitting moral hairs here, because if you wait for the mother to I'm not sure. I guess you're saying if you do a salpingectomy, it's okay.
Because that involves the principle of double effect. Of double effect, yes. That is double. An instance which fulfills the requirements of the principle of double effect, while the other approach, where you're just removing the baby directly, perhaps in pieces, dismembering the child, does not satisfy the requirements of the principle of double effect, but constitutes a direct attack on the body person of the very young human being.
Archie, unfortunately, we're going to have to leave it right there. I think we could have gone on for quite a bit with that. It's a great question. Father, for Archie, if he wants to kind of follow up, where could he find you?
Yeah, he can contact me at the National Catholic Bioethics Center, our website, ncbcenter.org, and especially check out our consultation service. We'd be happy to follow up further with him on that specific question.
Perfect. Thank you, Father, for this great hour. And before we end, can we actually have your blessing?
I'd be happy to. May Almighty God bless you in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen.
Right, Father Ted Poholcek, thank you very much. Really appreciate it. And that does it for Catholic Answers Live. And this week, we'll see you next week, and God bless you all.